It's not the projector that's broke. It's me. If y'all have noticed me this morning, I'm a little walking with a limp. Overdid it yesterday. Had treatment Friday, so I don't think my body's is quite used to all the yard work I did yesterday after treatment. So we're going to play the movie next Sunday. I'm off, and it's a good one to come out to see, as you'll hear about as I talk this morning. Russ came to me, and he asked to make another trip, and he asked me to preach. And always when he asked me to preach, I kind of, what am I going to preach about? You know, the good Lord in His wisdom always provides me a lesson. Some events that occurred when I was thinking about what am I going to preach about. One of it is a movie I watched, but it kind of had a little phrase, and just in one phrase throughout the whole movie, he said, just play the flute. Flute. Unusual name for a lesson, but I think as we go through this lesson, it will be like we talked about before. It's one of those aha moments. But as I went through this lesson and started studying what I wanted to study, it wasn't just an aha moment. It was an aha as it came together. And hopefully it will be the same thing for you this morning. There was an interaction, and I'll talk about it more here in just a moment. The interaction I had with one of the captains at the fire department that really led this lesson. The interaction and the conversation I had with him, and is when I get to that point, I really want to talk about that. But those are the two events that occurred almost within a 24-hour period after being told, hey, you need to preach. So it kind of led this lesson, and I hope you get as much enjoyment out of this lesson as I got to study this lesson. The verses that were read earlier is what the basis of this whole lesson is all about. You'll hear it more than once this morning. We'll go through it again. Talking about in Matthew chapter 11, verse 16, it tells us this. To what kind can I compare this generation? They are like children sitting in a marketplace and calling out to others. And then Matthew 11:17, it tells us this. And once again, there we go. It's just like me. It's a little slow getting around. In Matthew chapter 17 and 11, verse 17, it says this. We play the flute for you, and you did not dance. And we sang a song of what it's saying here, a song of mourning. You did not mourn. This word reference to what songs they would sing during a funeral. So when they say this, they're saying, when we sang a song of mourning, you did not mourn. Very unusual words coming from Jesus at this point. I want to take a moment, and I've never preached political. I never preached from that perspective, because everybody has their views, and I respect everybody's views. But this microaggression that's coming down, if you've heard this word and maybe not fully understand what it talks about, microaggression is a philosophy that's coming across, not only across the United States, but across the world. If you say something that offends me, then you have no right to say it any longer. I am offended by it, you being microaggressive, so you need to stop doing that. We laugh at that because of who we are. But in some countries, overseas, it is becoming law. That if you micro-offend somebody, that you could get in trouble for it. So don't offend me by what you have to say. And that's where our world's going, is going through microaggression. So anything that you say, you don't like an orange, that offends me. You better quit saying you don't like an orange. Then that is offensive. Where does that take us as Christians? A lot of things that we talk about, as we were talking about this morning, can be offensive. And when do we not try to offend, and when do we stand up? We got to tell it like it is. This is where I want to tell you about the captain that came to me. He came to me knowing I'm a Christian and said, hey, I just started going to church with my wife and her mother. And we got into this discussion, and I asked them, do you believe God? Because of some of the stuff you're giving across to me is not coming across that you actually believe God. And I went, aha, I got a book for you. So I gave him the book. He said, how much do I owe you? I know the author. You can have it. I've given out about six of them at work. And I gave him this book, and he started reading it. We were off for 48 hours. He come back to me and said, Chief, I need to talk to you again. Come on in. What's going on? And I'm thinking there's something wrong with going on the floor. Firefighters done something wrong, or they done ran an engine into the side of a building, you know, one of those type of things. So I'm sitting down prepared to listen to him tell me all about his problems, all about the firefighter problems. You remember that book you gave me? Absolutely, I remember. He says, it hit me between the eyes. That author tells it like it is. And I go, yes. And he'll tell you in the book that if you don't like it, I'm sorry. It's coming from God. It's not coming from him. He said, I read that. He said, and what I did is I went to my wife and I went and her mother and says, you need to read this book. And you know what he told them? And if you don't like what it says, put the book down and walk away. Because you're not going to listen to it anyway. That very moment, that struck me. That just walk away. If they don't want to hear the truth, he told them, put the book down and walk away because you're not going to listen to it anyway. Because he's telling it like it is. And that's what we need to do as Christians. Tell it like it is. The world wants us to do it this way. The world wants us to tell it like it is in a way they want to hear it. That's microaggression. Microaggression is changing the truth. Tell it like it is in the way they want to hear it. Okay, I don't like an orange, but it's okay. Orange is good. They want us to change the truth. And we should never, as Christians, get away from changing the truth. Before we can really talk about those two verses or three verses that we're talking about earlier, we got to go back in scriptures a little bit and find out what was going on before Jesus said what he said. Because there's a lot of things going on before he made that statement to put it into play, to make you go from an aha moment to an aha moment. And that's what we got to do with scriptures. We got to read it to understand it. So let's go to Matthew chapter 12, and I want to go over some of the verses in there. And then I'll be honest with you, it'll be a little hard to take, a little discouraging. But at the end, I think you'll be really encouraged, hopefully, because I was really encouraged by what Jesus was saying in that moment. In Matthew chapter 10, verse 1, at the very beginning of Matthew, he grabs his disciples together, and he tells them this, and when he had called unto him his 12 disciples, he gave them the power again to unclean spirits, to cast them out, and to heal all manner of sickness and to all manner of disease. Jesus is getting ready to send his disciples out on their own to start preaching and teaching the truth. And what does he do? He gives them full authority. Full authority. He says, you're speaking on my behalf. But when I do that, I'm going to give you the power to heal the sick, all the same power that I have so that they know that it's coming from me. But look what he says in Matthew chapter 10, verse 5 and 6. The 12 Jesus sent forth and commanded them, saying, go not into the way of the Gentiles and into the city of the Samaritan. Enter ye not. But rather go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Who did he send them to? He sent them to his people. God's people. That's where the lost was at. And as we get further talking about it, you realize that's where the struggle was at. The people, his own people. So brothers and sisters, this lesson is not to anybody out there this morning. It's to all of us. And we need to realize and accept that they're lost. But there's a lot of us that are lost. And when you accept that and realize that we need to understand that, that what he's speaking to us this morning is to us. And to those who are following us online, it is to all the ones he called Christians. Not the world who haven't accepted him, not the world who's already denied him, but it's to us. And sometimes that's a hard pill to swallow when we're being told, oh, I'm a Christian, I'm not a sinner. We all sin and fall short. So we need to realize and understand that. But look at the next part I want you to look at in talking in Matthew chapter 10. He wanted them to say, what's he telling them? As you go and preach, saying, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Heal the sick, clean the leopard, raise the dead, cast out the devil. Freely ye have, freely ye receive. He's telling them, basically, go tell them the good news. For 2,000 years, approximately 2,000 years since they left Egypt, they've been told the Messiah is coming. Through many, many prophets, they've been told the Messiah is coming. And now they're being told the time is now. Heaven is at hand. And if we need to, we can work from here. There we go. And the Messiah is here. They were told the time is at hand, heaven is near, and the Messiah is here. That's good news. Yeah. They've been told for 2,000 years that Jesus is coming. The son they've been looking forward to for all that time. Many prophets, many times. And now they're told, it's time. It's time for joy. But he tells him in verse 16, behold, I send you forth as sheep in the midst of wolves. His own people are going to try to destroy you. His own people who you're coming to tell them the good news are going to try to judge you and destroy you. I'm basically sending you as a sheep into a pack of wolves. God's people. How does he tell them to handle it? We talked about it this morning. I said, I'm act two. If you missed act one, I'm telling you, brothers and sisters, you missed a good act this morning. I'm only act two. I have something to live up to or a standard that Ray just set this morning for the lesson he taught this morning. But we talked about similar stuff this morning. But how did he tell them to handle it? Be ye therefore wise as a serpent. And harmless as a dove. Basically, get in there and tell them the truth. If they want to hear it, get out as quick as possible. Just preach the word. But doing it as gentle as a dove. So often as Christians, we get frustrated and mad when we try to tell somebody and we want to, you know, I had my kids. All those who are parents understand this. You try to tell your kid to do the right thing and sometimes they don't. And so we want to handle it that way as Christians. We find somebody we love and we say, you got to listen to me. We'll talk about that in a minute. But yet, he tells us right here, handle it as a dove. Gentle. That's the way we're supposed to handle it. And he tells them this. All men, and this is in verse 22, we're still in Matthew chapter 10, we haven't got into chapter 11 yet. All men will hate you because of me, but he who stands firm to the end will be saved. They don't hate you, brothers and sisters. When you tell the truth, they're not hating you, they're rejecting him. That's the part we need to really understand. When we teach the truth, they're going to get mad and upset at us. And that's why we need to be gentle, because they're not hating us. They're hating the message. Here, told also in verse 23, but when they persecute you in the city, flee you into another. For the truth I say to you. He said it earlier in Matthew chapter 10. If you go in the city and they don't want to hear the word, to shake off the dust up from your feet. You did your part. They don't want to listen, knock the dust off your feet and go on to somebody else. In Matthew chapter 11, we talk about John the Baptist. You never realize John the Baptist was one of the greatest and final prophets about the, telling the news of Jesus coming. John the Baptist was in prison, and this is what it tells us. We're in Matthew 11 now, chapter verse 2. When John was in prison, he heard about the deeds of the Messiah. He sent his disciples to ask him, "Are you the one who is to come? Or should we expect someone else?" Jesus replied, "Go back and report to John what you have heard and seen. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cleansed. The deaf hear and the dead are risen." And this last part, "and the good news proclaimed to the poor." Everything just lining up. This is the Messiah. Goes back and tell John the Baptist, yes, that's the case. And he's in the front of a crowd of people when he's telling them to do this. And then this is where we start to put things together. And Jesus tells the crowd right there in Matthew chapter 11, verse 14, "If you are willing to receive it, this is Elijah who is to come." He's talking about you had the great and final prophet, John the Baptist. Now he's in prison and you rejected him. You rejected the greatest, one of the greatest prophets of all time, the one right before Jesus. You rejected. And he tells them this. We say this verse all the time, but I don't think we put it in context following what happened prior to this. All the great events that just occurred with the disciples and the John the Baptist. He then says, "Who has ears to hear, let him hear." What's he saying here? I like it how it puts it in this one. Let anyone with ears listen to what I'm about to tell you. Pay attention to what I'm getting ready to say, because it's important. And that's verse 15. And he said, when we go into this, "To what can I compare this generation? They are like children sitting in a marketplace, calling out to others." You know, I read some commentaries trying to put this verse, these verses together. And a lot of the commentaries say, well, it only relates to that back then. They understood it better than we can understand it. That is so false. That is so far from the truth. Anything in Scriptures, brothers and sisters, is to you. Without a doubt. So when we look at it, you think about what's being said right here now. I compare you, your generations to like children sitting in a marketplace calling out to others. I imagine kids running around in a marketplace. And they say, "Come over here and follow me." Or they can say, "Come play my game." And then he just talked about himself and he just talked about John the Baptist. It's easy to say they're yelling at John the Baptist and Jesus for not playing their game. They're not following their rules. You know, kids, you don't pay attention when you take them to the marketplace. They want to go do something else. They're not paying attention to what's going on. You take them to church. It's hard to keep kids' attention in church. Take them to a funeral. They want to play. They don't know what's going on. And he called them that generation. You're so worried about yourself and what you want to do and what rules you want to play. And you want me to play by your game and your rules. And Jesus says, "I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it." To me, that was easy to understand when you really put your picture around these kids in the marketplace. And then he says this. He goes, "We play the flute for you and you did not dance." And they say the same thing, some of the commentaries. This is one of those verses that are really hard to understand. To me, it wasn't. When you play the flute, people dance and get excited about it. He's just talking about John the Baptist and himself telling him the good news. Something to celebrate. And there's no reaction. The people around have no reaction that the good news, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. And then the people are not reacting to it. And he goes on to say, we sing songs of mourning, nobody mourns. This makes perfect sense to me. And I think on a firefighter and a rescue perspective, I think about a hurricane coming in and I'm trapped in this house and all these floodwaters that come up, you know, that happened in Kentucky. You know, all those floodwaters that came up and people were trapped in the house and I'm the person that was saved. I think, wow, I've been rescued. I'm saved. I'm celebrating. But you know, so I'm also mourning for those who didn't make it. I'm also mourning knowing there's people trapped that are not going to be saved. And as Christians, we should be the same way. We should be getting excited about the great news, but understanding there's going to be family members and brothers and sisters, even church members, who are not going to be saved. And when you think about it that way, you mourn over that. It creates your reaction. I'll be honest with you. Even within our own congregation, I've noticed certain people who are no longer here that could be here. And I've literally mourned over that. And how do I handle that? What do I do to fix that? What can I do? And I sit there and mourn. Because I don't want to see my brothers and sisters in Christ, who I have a family relationship with, interact on a regular basis, not be here. That's the reaction we should have. So I struggle with this whole lesson. The more I got studied into it, the more I digged into it, I'm struggling with it. Yes, I want to celebrate. I want to dance in the street because I'm saved. But I'm mourning for those who are lost. It's a hard thing to take forth. It was read earlier to finish this up. For John came neither eating nor drinking, that they said he was the demon. The great prophet, they said, was the demon, trying to tell the news. And they called Jesus, and it tells in this verse, a drunkenness, eating with tax collectors and sinners. But his action and what he did showed them all wrong, that he's the one. So how do we put all this together? How does we go back to that original slide to play the flute? I want you to think about this concept for a second. Creating custom widgets. We don't create custom widgets. We don't create custom Christians. It's not our job to create those custom Christians. It's not our job to do that. We're not going to get fired because we don't meet a production level. Because we're not bringing so many Christians in here every week, Jesus is not going to come in here and say, well, that congregation over there got 20, you only got 10, you're fired. It doesn't work that way. We try to make it that way. I try to make it that way. When I see a brother and sister who's not here, when I try to preach to someone I love, I try to turn them and change them into a Christian widget that can do this and can do that. But that's not our job. Our job is not even close to that. We're supposed to play the flute. We're supposed to celebrate and teach the gospel. Because brothers and sisters, let me tell you the thing that we need to realize. We don't make people follow Christ. We give them the gift, and they accept it or deny it. We can't make somebody have a relationship with Christ or with God. We're told to preach and teach. What they do with it after that is 100% on them. So if we never grow in another membership right here, right now, as long as we're doing teaching and preaching the truth, we're doing God's will. We can be the same size for the till the Lord comes. As long as we're teaching and preaching the truth, playing the flute, we're doing what we're supposed to. We got to quit thinking that we can make somebody have a relationship with God. The only thing that you can affect is your relationship with God. You know, in the first century, we're told they added to the church daily. Who added to the church? God added to the church daily. They didn't add to the church. God added to the church daily. If we speak and tell the truth, then He'll add when the time is right. And we got to focus on that. We need to teach and yell the truth. We got to do it in a kind way, brothers. We got to do it as doves, as they were told to the disciples, with love and compassion, just like we talked about this morning. Not to offend them, not to get angry, not to get upset. Just give them the truth. Play the flute. That's all we got to do. Isn't the pressure now off of you? Because when I thought about the aha moment, as you know, what do we do to fix things? How do we make people do what they're supposed to? Aha! We can't. All we got is the gospel. All we got to do is turn it over to them, and it's their responsibility to take it from there. If they accept it, then we are there to help in every way possible. If they deny it, on to the next one. That's all we got to do. No pressure. No responsibility. Their responsibility is on them. That's what we need to accept. We just need to preach the truth. Play the flute. That's all we got to do. Look how he ends this. We read this verse all the time. But now that I've gone through chapter 10 and 11 and all the things involved, this is what he tells us at the end of chapter 11, verse 28 and 30. Kind of puts it all in perspective, don't it? Come to me, all who are labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. And I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your soul. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. He done laid all this on top of him. He just chastised his own people and says, look, it's pretty simple. Just play the flute and come follow me. Play the flute because my yoke is light and easy. We do that, he'll take care of the rest. He's the creator. He's the one that created this day, as you always say. It's all on him. We just got to teach and preach the truth. So this morning, I leave you a lesson that's directly towards all of us this morning. It has nothing to do with anybody out there. It has everything to do with us. Just hopefully it encourages you to realize all you got to do is play the flute. They don't like you. They're not liking you. They're not liking Jesus. They're not denying you. They're denying the truth. You give them a great gift and they're turning it down. So work is pretty easy. Because if we're faithful and stand firm, as we read earlier, we're rescued. We're saved. So as we look around, because not only is the church being affected here, but throughout the Tri-Cities, Churches of Christ, and throughout the nation are going through the same thing we're going through. Our numbers are dwindling. But we don't have to worry. It's not our responsibility to fill the pews. Our responsibility is to tell the truth. Keep doing that, and God will take care of the rest. I don't know what you're struggling with this morning. I don't know what you're going through, but I'm telling you right now, the second part of if you're one of the ones that accepted it because you're here. We're here together. I can tell you his yoke is easy and the burden is light. And we can make it lighter by praying prayers for you this morning. So whatever you're going through, just let us know. And if you're online, text Wesley. Let him know, because I said it before and I'm going to say it again. We can't help you if we don't know. We don't know what's going on in your life. We're not having interaction for you. We can't help you unless you tell us. If you need anything, there's a lot of us here to be able to be there for you. But there's two parts to a relationship. Communication goes two ways. We got to communicate back and forth. We need to check on them to make sure they're okay. But y'all need to let us know what your needs are. Because, you know, a typical me, how you doing? I'm fine. Everything good? A lot of times we don't tell what our needs are because we don't want to burden nobody. But that's our responsibility. If we're burdened, we're here to help one another. So if there's anything that we can do for you this morning, why don't you just come now as we stand and sing.